right. Good evening, folks. QST, this is Bruce, KK5DO. It is once again time for another edition of the Houston AmSatNet. This net meets on Tuesdays to discuss topics related to satellites, balloons, and other amateur-related items. This is net number 1662, and it's 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday, May 5th, 2026, which in UTC time is Wednesday, May 6th at 0100 UTC. Sorry, this net is only being heard on Echolink and our normal streaming service. All right, so there we go for the preamble. And the audio should be just fine. The new microphone seems to be doing quite well. So let's start right out off with the what we have from BLT that we get from Walter K5WH. And he says, our friends in Kansas launched their first three balloons last week, and one of them is still flying high over 41,000 feet over northwest Canada. Now, this was on May 4th, so it may have moved a little bit. Without giving you the big URL, if you go look for it, it's using call sign W0RBO-12, so you can find it out there. And we did speak, I think, before about Sven AF5LI, who has redesigned the Pecon 12 APRS tracker to be smaller, tri-band, and with the support for a camera as well. The first pilot build should be ready in a couple weeks, with at least one to be flown from our local BLT team here. This will support the normal VHF APRS and possibly UHF LORA, which stands for Long Range APRS, and a 2.4 GHz still to be defined. So more to follow on that in the future. So thanks, Walter, for providing that to us. And I do have a little timer going on the screen. So at about 8 or 9 minutes, hopefully, if I notice it, I'll give it a break so the repeaters can all reset, and hopefully we don't get in trouble with that. This one comes from Nico, PA0DLO, and with the launch of Cosmos 2600, which is Object 67674, 8 more smaller Cosmos satellites were launched. 5 of those transmit 62.5 kilohertz wide long-range signals in the 70-centimeter band. So they may be a little bit outside the ham bands, but you can still listen for them. Cosmos 2603 can be heard on 430.492. Cosmos 2605 can be heard on 430.772. Cosmos 2606, you can hear it on 430.912. Cosmos 2607 is on 431.052. And finally, Cosmos 2608 on 430.632. So if you happen to take a listen for those and you hear them, maybe you'll be able to figure out what kind of data they're sending and possibly decode it. You never know. And that does it for our other kinds of news. So we've got the Houston AmSat News Service bulletins for May 3rd. So they're a couple days old, but they're still nice and fresh. A reminder, AmSat at Hamvention, the 2026 Dayton Hamvention, will be Friday through Sunday, May 15th through 17th. So we're very rapidly coming up on that date. It'll be in Greene County Fairgrounds in Xenia, Ohio. AmSat will once again have a strong presence throughout the event, including booth activities, social gatherings, and the annual AmSat Forum. The 17th annual Taper AmSat Banquet will be held Friday, May 15th at 6:30 p.m. And they've got Eastern Daylight Time so that there's no confusion there at the Kohler Presidential Banquet Center. You can get the address on AMSAT.org when you go over there to purchase your tickets, because there are no tickets sold at the Hamvention. You have to have your tickets purchased in advance. This dinner is a highlight of the Taper, which is the Tucson Amateur Packet Radio and AMSAT, Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation, activities during Hamvention. Every year, they switch between who is arranging the speaker. One year it'll be AMSAT, the next year it'll be Taper. So this year, I think it's AMSAT, because Ray Robridge, WA1-CYB, will be the speaker. And he's a member of AMSAT's engineering team, and he'll speak about the progress on AMSAT's SDR Gen 2 project, including what it does and where it can be used. And tickets are $75 a piece and may be purchased through the AMSAT store. There is a deadline of Monday, May 11th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's because they need to tell the banquet hall how much food to prepare for us. So be sure to get your tickets purchased well in advance. There will be no tickets available for pickup at the AMSAT booth. Tickets purchased online will be maintained on a list with check-in at the door at the banquet center. Seating is limited to the number of meals reserved with the Kohler caterers based on ticket sales by the deadline. And let me tell you, that food is very, very good. I was up there one year, and oh boy, you walk out of there and you need to walk around for quite a while to burn off all those calories. Then we have the annual AMSAT dinner at Tickets. So this is gathering will take place Thursday, May 14th. So that's before Hamvention, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, of course, at Tickets Pub and Eatery. And it's located in Fairborn, Ohio, at 7 West Main Street. This is an informal event, features no program or speaker, offering an opportunity for conversation and camaraderie. All are welcome, regardless of participation in the booth setup or operations. Food may be ordered from the menu, and drinks, including beer, wine, sodas, and iced tea, are available at the bar. No reservations are required. Just show up and enjoy your time. So let me stop this over here. Okay, there we go. We reset the counters here. And let's see, where are we? AMSAT is seeking volunteers to assist at the AMSAT booth. So if you'd like to help us out, man the booth for an hour or so people can have a break or whatever, we're going to be located in Building 1, booths 1007 through 1010, and right across the walkway in 1107 through 1100. So volunteers are encouraged to contribute as much time as they are able, whether for a few hours or the entire weekend. In 2025, approximately 20 volunteers supported AMSAT's activities and engagement with attendees. It's always fun. You never know who's going to walk by, going to ask you a question. They want to get into ham radio or into working satellites and, you know, what do I need? And, of course, you can always point them to the station we've got set up to run some demos. So those interested in volunteering or requesting more information can contact Phil Smith, W1EME, who's in charge of the Hamvention team leader, and he's W1EME at astrocom.net. So it's astrocom.net. Volunteer participation plays an important role in supporting AMSAT's presence and outreach within the amateur radio community. And finally, we have the AMSAT Forum, which will be held Saturday, May 16th from 1:50 p.m. until 3:10 p.m. there again in Eastern Time, in Forum Room Number 2. So if you'd like to listen in on what everyone's got to say about all the goings-on at AMSAT, that's the place to listen. Don't forget to visit ARRL and all the other people's booths that are there. There's a plethora of them, and you'll have a really good time. So, Fuji Oscar 29 update. And it's been up there quite a while, since 1996. It continues to operate its VU inverting analog linear transponder under the control of JARL. Because the onboard batteries have failed years ago, the satellite depends entirely on solar power and can only function when its solar panels are illuminated. Now, does that sound a little bit like another satellite? Possibly AO7, which only operates when it's in sunlight? Very interesting how those things turn out. If you happen to get over to Tokyo, it's well worth the trip to go visit JARL headquarters. I was there many years ago. First floor has a bunch of memorabilia. And if you're lucky enough to get a tour of the roof, you can see all their antennas that happen to be squeezed on this small, tiny roof because there's really not much space when you get to some of the buildings there in Japan. And they've got everything up there to operate HF and satellite. So it's really nice. So the current status of FO-29 as of May 2026, it entered full sunlight orbit in early March 2026 and lasted approximately 40 days. This continuous operation ended around April 21st, after which the satellite entered an eclipse period for about 1 month. A second, longer full sunlight period is expected from approximately May 20th to mid-November, during which continuous operation should resume. So that's always really good when it gets a long period of illumination. So because of that, you should not use the satellite except during, obviously, their schedule. But before we get to that schedule, there's an important restriction. Some people have tried to use digital modes on some of the satellites, and they'll use it on many of the linear satellites. Please be warned, you cannot use a digital mode on FO-29. And the reason is digital modes are generally not permitted on FO-29 linear transponder due to licensing and operational constraints. So they don't have a license for that mode of transmission over their satellite. If you do it, you get the operators of the satellite in trouble, and that may cause a satellite to be shut down. So we don't want that to happen. It's best to observe the warning and not do any digital mode on FO-29. So during the eclipse period, or the transition out of full sunlight, JARL control team sends specific commands to activate the transponder at designated UTC times. If the transponder does not turn on within about 2 minutes of the command start, the team terminates the attempt. Obviously, it means the batteries don't have enough juice to run. So, during confirmed full sunlight periods, no regular command schedule is needed. The transponder stays active whenever the satellite is in sunlight. Operators should always check real-time status via AMSAT Live Satellite Status, OSCAR status pages, or recent community reports, as voltage instability in the aging satellite can occasionally cause unexpected behavior. So here's the May schedule. And since we are up to the 5th, since this is UTC, we'll go to the 6th. 21:50, 7th. 22:40, 8th, 21:44, 9th, 22:35, 15th, 22:19, and the 16th, 23:10. So, listen maybe 10-15 minutes on either side of that, because satellite could come on earlier or it could come on late, and that way you'll be there if it does come on. Use the proper Doppler correction. Follow the linear transponder etiquette. Listen before transmitting and keep signals clean. Limit your uplink power to avoid overloading the transponder. Typically, no more than a few watts with a modest antenna is enough. The JARL page provides the detailed historical and upcoming command schedules for eclipse periods across 2025 and 2026 for the absolute latest status and any updates from the Japanese control team. Monitor the official JARL FO29 page. And FO29's continued operation nearly 30 years after launch remains a testament to robust engineering and dedication of the JARL team. And we'll go ahead and pause our stream so that the repeaters can reset. All right. So, the FCC approves limited emergency use of the 70-centimeter band by AST SpaceMobile satellites outside the U.S. And before we do that, I might as well go down the list of those that are joining us on Echolink. We've got Mitch, AD0HJ, Dave, WB7DRU, David, N8SGZ, Caldwell, I don't have a name on that one. W5JMA is in Caldwell, Texas. Almost got caught calling him Caldwell. Chris, KC8COS in Stuart, West Virginia. N6UTC, hello, Endoff, joining us out there in Long Beach. KD5PQJ. And Damien, AG9P, up in... I'm not sure. It's Alcanto, but I'm not sure what WLI is. So, thank you all for joining us here on Echolink. And those that are listening through the live stream, thank you over there. So, back to the FCC. So, they've granted AST SpaceMobile limited authorization when not over the United States to use 5 50 kilohertz channels in the 430 to 440 megahertz secondary amateur band for emergency telemetry, tracking, and control operations for its planned satellite constellation. Sort of sounds familiar, like someone competing with Starlink or something of that nature. The authorization granted on April 21 applies only for communication with 5 specified Earth stations, each located well outside the United States, and for which the foreign administration with jurisdiction also must separately authorize the communications. More than 2,500 comments were filed during the proceedings, including filings from the ARRL and other member societies of the International Amateur Radio Union, AMSAT, and individual radio amateurs worldwide. After considering the filed comments, the FCC narrowed the requested authorization to emergency TT&C only and further provided that use of these frequencies is permitted only in emergencies when no other spectrum is available. Each emergency event is limited to no more than 24 hours. Transmissions are restricted to 5 specific center frequencies. They've got 430.5, 432.3, 434.1, 435.9, and 439.5 megahertz, each with no more than 50 kilohertz bandwidth. In In an April 29 statement, the IARU expressed concern with the FCC's use of Article 4.4 of the ITU radio regulations, which allows administrations to authorize non-standard frequency use under certain conditions. The IARU stated the other frequency bands allocated for satellite TT&C should have been used instead of amateur spectrum and encouraged amateurs to report any interference to their national regulators. So, if you happen to be listening to those frequencies and they are being used over the United States, you can drop an email to... I think I've got it up on the, here it is, reginfo@arrl.org. Again, reginfo@arrl.org. They will accumulate those. They will even take a listen and make sure and try to determine if that is in fact those satellites and if they're violating their rules. So, when the ARRL filed their comments in July and August opposing the application, the request represented an unprecedented use of secondary amateur spectrum for an unallocated use by large commercial satellite constellation. Such operations could cause harmful interference, particularly to amateur satellites in the 435 to 438 megahertz subband. The FCC should avoid authorizing non-allocated uses that could impact primary allocations for amateur services in other countries. While the FCC ultimately granted the authorization, it imposed the above significant limitations in response to these concerns that reduce the likelihood of interference. And we've already given out the email address for filing a complaint here. The ARRL will oppose any similar unallocated uses of spectrum used by amateurs that might cause harmful interference to amateur services, and in particular, will monitor the situation. So possibly they'll be listening to those quite regularly. All right. So, next item here is the Saudi Amateur Radio Society sponsors SATHON 2, and that's SATHON. The Saudi Amateur Radio Society, in collaboration with AMSAT-HZ, has announced the launch of the second edition SATHON 2 as part of its national initiative specialized in satellite communications. The competition aims to develop national talent in satellite communication technologies through hands-on training in receiving, analyzing, decoding satellite signals across various formats. It also focuses on empowering university students by bridging academic knowledge with real-world application while fostering innovation and teamwork skills. The competition will take place from May 8th through the 10th in a team-based format and includes two categories, university students and professionals and amateur radio operators. How interesting. They include the amateur radio operators with the professionals. That's nice. And there is a cash prizes will be awarded to the top three winners in each category, in addition to participation certificates and volunteer hours. So if you're interested, we've got a link up on our webpage, amsatnet.com, and you can download that. So thanks to Samir HZ1SK and the Saudi Amateur Radio Society for that information. And it's time once again to put a break in our transmission here. Okay, I hope that's keeping all the repeaters happy. Request for collecting CW data of ERICA 2, that's ARICA-2, It's a 2U CubeSat. It launched several weeks ago, maybe almost 3 weeks, on April 23rd. Well, okay, 2 weeks. The non-amateur mission goal of ERICA 2 is to demonstrate the real-time alert system of transient astronomical sources, such as gamma ray bursts, using commercial satellite network services, and to collect the images of the Earth and hopefully aurora with a camera utilizing machine learning capability. So the amateur mission is to provide a store and forward capability using 4K8 GMSK and AX25 format transceiver for communicating among amateurs. The alert and housekeeping data are also broadcast through the amateur CW transmitter. And we don't use broadcast, we use transmitter or transmit. So we'll let them slide on that one. ERICA 2 is operating very stably with no issues in its batteries or onboard equipment. Thanks to reception reports from amateurs worldwide, the lab has been able to successfully receive CW signals from ERICA every day, as well as GMSK signals triggered by uplinks from the Ioma Gakuin University's ground station. And I apologize if I didn't pronounce those quite right. At present, ERICA 2 is still undergoing satellite checkout procedures. An amateur mission that will allow communication using GMSK has not yet started. Once the timing is appropriate to begin the amateur mission, the ERICA 2 team will announce it through the AMSAT BB and on X. Until then, Sakamoto Laboratory would greatly appreciate the continued cooperation of amateurs in receiving the CW data, which contains housekeeping information from the satellite. And preliminary TLEs are up on amsat.org. The frequency to listen on is 436.830 for the CW, and it is 20 words per minute, so either have something that will capture it and decode it for you, or hopefully you can capture it yourself at 20 words per minute. Then they've got a link to upload data to them. So a collection of the CW data of ERICA is greatly appreciated, thanks to Taka Sakamoto, JA6, NWC of Sakamoto Laboratory. So hopefully they get enough data to find out what the satellite's doing, how healthy it is, and all that neat stuff. That's what's kind of fun with a CubeSat SIM. It allows you to put a light source on it to illuminate the solar panels, and then if you set that little CubeSat SIM on a rotating little table, you can watch the satellite as each of the solar panels on the different sides illuminate and charge the battery or discharge because they're not illuminated. So it's kind of neat. And then you get all the housekeeping data to see the spin rotation as it's rotating on that dish, and kind of fun. So NASA completes Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope. They've completed assembly. It's a next-generation observatory designed to map the universe on an unprecedented scale. Engineers at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center are finishing pre-launch testing before the spacecraft is shipped to the Kennedy Space Center. Launch preparation is underway with a target as early as September, placing the mission ahead of its original schedule. Once deployed, Roman will operate from a distant orbit approximately 1 million miles from Earth. The new telescope is designed to complement existing observatories such as the Hubble Space Telescope and the James Webb Space Telescope. While those missions focus on detailed observations of individual targets, Roman will conduct wide-field surveys, capturing images with similar resolution across areas roughly 100 times larger. This capability will allow astronomers to transition from isolated observations to large-scale mapping of cosmic structures. The result is expected to provide a broader context for many of the discoveries made by earlier space telescopes. And I'm just wondering if someday they get something way, way, way out there and they see somebody waving at it. That'll be something interesting. At the core of the mission is an 8-foot primary mirror paired with a powerful infrared imaging system. Roman's wide field of view allows it to observe large regions of the sky in far fewer pointings than previous telescopes. For example, imaging the Andromeda Galaxy would require hundreds of individual exposures with Hubble, but only a handful with Roman. This efficiency makes the observatory particularly well-suited for large survey missions and time domain astronomy. One of Roman's primary science goals is to study dark matter and dark energy, which together make up the majority of the universe. By mapping hundreds of millions of galaxies and measuring subtle distortions in their shapes, scientists can trace how invisible mass influences the structure of the cosmos. Observations of type IA supernovae will also help refine measurements of cosmic expansion. These combined data sets are expected to improve our understanding of the universe's evolution and underlying physical laws. The telescope will also expand the search for exoplanets using gravitational microlensing techniques. By monitoring dense star fields in the Milky Way's central region, Roman can detect planets that orbit far from their host stars, including free-floating worlds. This approach complements earlier missions that focused on planets closer to their stars. In addition, Roman will test advanced chronograph technology capable of blocking starlight to directly observe faint planetary companions. And we'll take a quick break right here. All right. And Roman's wide field imaging capability will also support time domain astronomy by repeatedly scanning large areas of the sky. These observations will capture transient events such as a supernovae, black hole activity, and other short-lived phenomena. The resulting data sets will serve as a long-term reference for future discoveries, enabling astronomers to compare before and after views of dynamic regions of space. We've got a link to that complete story at amsatnet.com, and it comes from Alicia Sowers, Mashable.com, and from NASA. So, very interesting. Now, SpaceX. Earth's moon is to be on the receiving end of a spent rocket stage in early August, the leftovers from a SpaceX Falcon 9 launch last year. So, we got debris that comes down into the oceans on Earth. Now we've got something that's going down on the moon, which somewhere down the road, someone will walk on the moon again and say, "What's this stuff?" So, Firefly's Blue Ghost Mission 1, named Ghost Riders in the Sky, launched on January 15, 2025, and performed the first fully successful commercial lunar landing on March 2nd at the moon's Mare Crisium. That lander went on to mark the longest commercial operation on the moon to date. Meanwhile, the Falcon 9's leftover upper stage, labeled 2025-010D, that lobbed the two private spacecraft into space, is now headed for a run in with the moon. and the Project Pluto, Bill Gray over there, he says, we've been tracking it since launch. The orbit has changed a bit over the last year or so and is now headed for a lunar impact. Project Pluto provides software tools useful for astronomers to identify satellites in their data and has published a page of data about the Falcon 9 upper stage. He recalls that NASA's Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite mission back years ago did something very similar. We now have another upper stage due to hit the moon, this one on August 5th, and just barely on the near side of the moon. That might be rather interesting if they can visualize it from Earth through some of the high-power telescopes and things. That might be kind of neat. Gray said he doesn't expect this particular object to cause any trouble. It doesn't present any danger to anyone. I would say not. I wonder if it has enough force to knock the moon out of its orbit. Ha ha. Though it does highlight certain carelessness about how leftover space hardware is disposed of. The chance that rubble kicked up by the impact would hit a moon-circling spacecraft is quite small. But he wouldn't factor in that into... or he would factor that into any planned maneuvers. In a few years, things may be different. Gray said, given humans tromping about on the lunar surface, that raises the stakes considerably. If I were sending an upper stage to high orbit, I would think about where it was going. And he said, you might launch an upper stage today and then years later see a real problem. Especially if they want to put some repeaters up there on the moon. Maybe they want to put some kind of humans that live in some kind of a habitat or something. And 10, 15 years down the road, all of a sudden this launched vehicle or rocket decides that that's going to be its landing zone. So could be an issue. This comes from Spacecom, and the full article is up at AMSAT. net.com. So some of the TLE changes May 1st. We've got a few satellites that were added, and basically these are all that we went over, I believe, last week. Magnaro 2 Pisces. Its object 68798. And a frequency of 436.326. Erica 2, we already know about it because we had the story on it. FSI-SAT 2 is object 68792, frequency of 437.176. Waseda-SAT 02 is object 68797, and their frequency is 437.205. And finally, Origami-SAT 2, object 68795, on a frequency of 437.506 megahertz. And AMSAT is pleased to announce that modern forms of what are called general perturbations data are being disseminated via modern formats, including JSON, XML, and KVN. And there's links to all those. And the reason for this change is being made is that we are running out of five-digit catalog numbers. And the TLE format is not viable for satellites launched after July of this year. So it sounds like we've got the 2001 syndrome. Or the 2000 syndrome, I should say, went from the 1900s into the 2000s, and we had to figure out, gosh, what do we do? So this is the solution. These data are presently considered in beta tests for the next 2 months while hosted on the test server. And I think I got that link up there, and we're very open to community feedback. Of course, send your feedback to webmaster@amsat.org. Testers may experience outages and errors while we make improvements. We intend to put this into production on our main web server in July, as we expect that satellites launched after this summer will require one of the new formats to accommodate longer object numbers. HAMSAT will continue to publish TLE bulletins for satellites launched before July 2026 indefinitely. So we'll see what happens, thanks to Joe, KM1P, who's the HAMSAT Orbital Elements Manager. And it looks like it's time for a pause here. Oh. Okay, that seems to be working out just fine. That little stopwatch is in a perfect spot. So, Artemis II, moon astronauts visit the White House. So, President Trump invited the Artemis II quartet and NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman to the Oval Office on April 29th for a live-streamed press event that the White House described as a greeting. It takes people like this to make our country great, said Trump. We're very proud of these people. They have unbelievable courage. And Artemis II had launched April 1st and returned to Earth on April 10th. The mission sent Reid Weissman, KF5LKT, Victor Glover, KI5BKC, Christina Hammock Koch, and Canadian astronaut Jeremy Hansen, KF5LKU, on an epic journey around the moon and back. They were the first people to leave Earth orbit since the Apollo 17 astronauts in 1972, and they got further from their home planet than anyone ever has before, breaking the record set by Apollo 13 in 1970. So that was a good mission. This story comes from Spacecom, and the full link to the article is at hamsatnet.com. Oh, good. I'm kind of getting this on almost to the hour. We've got a little bit more to go here. Eris News. They recently completed Scouts Australia Victorian branch. That was back on May 2nd. And upcoming, Universidad Tecnológica Nacional Facultad Regional in San Rafael, Argentina. Their contact will be on May 5th. That was today, so it should have been done earlier. And then Nano Potsdam in Potsdam, Germany. They're going to have their contact on May 7th. So those are coming up. Many times a school may make a last-minute decision to do a live stream or run into a last-minute glitch requiring a change of the URL. But we at ARIS may not get the URL in time for publication. So you can always check live.aris.org. And that's where they did a live streaming. Of course, the crossband repeater continues to be active on 145.990 MHz up using a PL tone of 67. Downlink, 437.800. Remember, crew members can operate any time they want. All they have to do is go over to the radio, turn the volume up, and start talking. If you don't hear them, don't bother calling for them. The radio volume won't be up. They won't hear anything, so doesn't matter. APR is also active, 145.825 MHz. And please note that ARIS is still in the process of troubleshooting and testing the Kenwood D710GA radio in this VEDDUB service module. That call sign is RS0ISS. So feel free to check out status reports. That's up at ARIS.com. ARIS.org. Yeah. And the Ham TV in the Columbus European Laboratory is currently transmitting a test signal on 2395 MHz. And there's more information up at ARIS.org. ambassador activities. Of course, Dayton Hamvention's coming up. And then October 8th through 11th, we've got the 44th AMSAT Space Symposium and Annual Membership Meeting. The 8th and the morning of the 9th, I believe, are the Board of Directors meeting. The afternoon of the 9th and the 10th, I think that should be Friday and Saturday, we have all the symposium talks. And then the morning of the 11th, we've got a big get-together breakfast. So you can get more information forthcoming at AMSAT.org. And for a few satellite shorts, we've already talked about Iowa State launching their balloons. Oh, no, this one's different. This one's the Iowa State. They're going to launch a 10 kilohertz wide non-inverting linear transponder. Oh, yeah, that was their balloon. And that's up there and floating around. The hatches are open between the International Space Station and the New Progress 95 cargo spacecraft following the delivery of about 3 tons of food, fuel, and supplies on Monday. Expedition 74 commander Sergei Kudryavtsev and flight engineer Sergei Mikhov, both from Roscosmos, finalized leak and pressure checks between Progress 95 and Zvezda service module's rear port on Tuesday. Afterward, the duo installed air ducts and began unpacking the spacecraft, beginning 7 months of cargo activities in the resupply ship. Oh, boy, how much is that? 3 tons. And you would think that's a lot to move. But I think it kind of doesn't weigh much up there. We already talked about AST Mobile. And then SpaceX's new powerful operational rocket, the Falcon Heavy, lifted off Wednesday carrying a massive communication satellite on its 12th flight since 2018. The 27 Merlin engines of the 3 Falcon boosters roared to life at 1413 UTC, and the 70-meter-tall, which is 229 feet, rocket thundered away from Launch Complex 39A, propelled by 5 million pounds of thrust. Deployment of the satellite came at nearly 5 hours after liftoff. The upper stage featured an additional thermal protection layer to ensure the fuel, a rocket-grade kerosene, does not freeze during the roughly 4-hour coasting phase between the second and third engine ignitions. The ViaSat-3 F3 satellite is the second in the series to be launched on board SpaceX Falcon Heavy rocket, and the third and final member of this constellation. The first satellite, ViaSat-3 Americas, launched on the Falcon Heavy rocket in 2023. That comes from Space Flight as well, spaceflightnow.com. So, that does it for our ANS bulletins for this week. This week, our editor was Mark Johns, K0JM. And don't forget, you can become an AMSAT member at AMSATnet, not AMSATnet, AMSAT.org. And if you're a student, we've got a really special deal for you. You can keep all your pennies in your piggy bank because membership is free through up to the age of 25. So if you're a student, just join in for all this fun, and it won't cost you a thing. It looks like it's 8:49 p.m., and I'm going to call it quits. That worked out pretty good. I sure do miss the slow scan images that Andy used to send, but maybe one day we'll have those back. So, for the Houston AMSATnet and for Marty, this is Bruce, KK5DO, 73.